Blog Talk Radio.
La notte a Terzio.
It was very late at night.
Sempre a piatra fara.
I was sitting outside on a rock.
Lo stane a marata piatra che non fa la mini.
As Stan said, I showed him the rock when he came to my home.
Acolo stam și mă gândeam ce am făcut eu.
And I was just thinking, what did I do?
Plângeam să nu mă vadă familia.
I was crying so my family wouldn't see me.
Deodată am văzut că vine o lumină spre mine.
And all of a sudden, I saw a light coming towards me.
Când am văzut lumina, am crezut că e o mașină.
When I saw the light, I thought it was a car.
În Italia și în România m-au urmărit cu mașina să mă omoare.
Because in Romania and in Italy, they always try to run me over with cars.
După mine și aici.
So I thought they found me here too.
Dar n-a fost mașină.
But it was not a car.
Că lumina m-a cucerit.
The light surrounded me.
Și din lumina am auzit aceeași voce.
And out of the light I heard the same voice.
Era același înger.
It was the same angel.
Dumitru, de ce ești disperat?
Dumitru, why are you so despaired?
De ce m-ai pedepsit așa de tare?
Why did you punish me so harshly?
Ce am făcut eu?
What did I do?
Ce nu m-a lăsat pe mine în pușcărie?
Why couldn't you let me stay in prison?
Familia avea unde să stea.
But my family would have had a home.
Zic, eu n-am unde pleca acasă.
I don't have a bed to let my head down on.
De ce m-ai adus aici?
Why was I brought here?
Dumitru, te-am adus aici că țara asta va...
Dumitru, I brought you to this country because this country will burn.
Și m-ai adus să mă ard aici și nu m-ai lăsat să mor în pușcărie în țara mea.
So why did you bring me here to burn? Why didn't you let me die in jail in my own country?
Dumitru, taci.
He said, Dumitru, be quiet.
Urcă-te lângă mine.
Get beside me.
Ce aparat a avut, nu.
I don't know what the device was.
M-a tras lângă el.
But he pulled me beside him.
Mi-a arătat toată California.
And he showed me all of California. Do you see what I've shown you?
Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Păcatul lor a ajuns înaintea lui Dumnezeu.
Their sins have reached God.
Și Dumnezeu a hotărât să-i pedepsească pe.
And God has decided to punish them by fire.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Las Vegas.
He came and showed me Las Vegas.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va...
And one day it will burn.
Mi-a arătat New York.
He came and showed me New York.
Aici e New York.
This is New York.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
In one day it will burn.
M-a dus și mi-a arătat Florida.
And then he showed me Florida.
Aici e Florida.
This is Florida.
Aici e Sodoma și Gomorra.
This is a Sodom and Gomorrah.
Într-o zi va arde.
And in one day it will burn.
Da, cu mine ce ai să
faci? What will you do with
me, I said? Been listening to the Wake Up America message with Dimitru Dudeman. For a copy of this very important message, please go to our website at handofhelp.com. Never before in the history of our country has our nation been in more jeopardy than now. Please order a copy of the video Wake Up America at the handofhelp.com website and get the warning out while we still have time. This is the Light of Truth radio broadcast with Michael Boldea.
All right. Well, here we are. And not a moment too soon. Welcome to the program and thank you for joining us. It's been one of those hectic days. It is hot in Wisconsin. It's days like these that make one wonder about global warming. But then you get a 62-degree day when it's supposed to be 95 and you realize, maybe man thinks too much of himself after all. Maybe we're not really affecting temperature, as it were. But that's neither here nor there. This is the reality we're living. It's got to be 90 degrees out. You walk outside and it's sort of like an oven. This morning was real humid. It's a little less humid this afternoon. So that's a plus. But welcome to the program, nevertheless. You're not tuning in to hear of my woes with the heat. But this is the Light of Truth radio broadcast. And I am your host, Michael Boldea. And once again, we are embarking upon an entire hour of fellowship, of discussion, and perhaps some noteworthy news items that have been making the rounds of late. Every time things begin to heat up in this world of ours, it seems certain people have certain reactions. Let me put it that way. Every time we look at the world spiraling out of control, every time one feels as though they're getting battered from all sides with no obvious relief, every time they look around for a way out and there's no way out of the melee, I wonder to myself, And I've mentioned this before. I wonder very often, seeing everything that we're seeing going on in the world, seeing things just spiraling out of control in places that one would not have thought to look even. I wonder how the godless cope. You see, we who have hope, we who have God, we who have the assurance that He will be with us and in us until the end of time, we who are the sons and daughters of God sometimes get a bit frazzled, sometimes start to wonder, sometimes look around to see if anyone else is feeling the way we're feeling. If, as children of God, what's happening in the world today makes us catch our breath once in a while, what are the hopeless doing seeing everything that's playing out? This is a serious question. It's been on my mind more and more often lately. How do the godless cope? How do those who have embraced nothingness, those who scoff at the idea of God, those who are embittered and empty and altogether alienated from the warmth of love or the comfort of security, how do they cope during these times? And if they're having a hard time now, I can't help but wonder how they will react when the toboggan really starts sliding down the hill. I can't help but wonder how they'll react as we continue to pick up speed and they begin to realize that we're not slowing down. I have a feeling that the selfsame people, the same individuals who are currently mocking us and laughing at the fact that we have put our trust in the Almighty, will be knocking on our door looking for answers, looking for peace, looking for hope, looking for some way to quiet the storm, looking for some way to cling to something greater than themselves. And as yet, it still surprises me how people continue to refuse to acknowledge their own impotence. It's surprising to me how people still beat their chest and think themselves immutable and unshakable and strong and resolute, not realize that the darkest of the dark days have not as yet arrived. Look, it's easy to beat one's chest when the enemy is not on the horizon, when the store shelves are still full, when you can still drive through McDonald's and get something closely resembling a beef patty and a gallon of sugar water to wash it all down for a couple bucks, when you can still stop at the gas station and fill up your car with actual gas. All things we take for granted. All things most people believe will be here in perpetuity, no matter the circumstance, no matter the global ruckus, no matter the peripheral events taking place all around them. See, take for granted the things that you have no control over . It makes you foolhardy. When you assume that you will never see a bare supermarket store, when you assume you'll never see a sign saying no gas at a gas station, when you assume that, for the most part, people will act with civility and decorum around you, you're making assumptions that fly in the face of historical precedent. That's the best way I can put it. When you assume that everything's going to be all right, you're assuming something that flies in the face of historical precedent. Because if history has taught us anything, it's that the train flies off the skids more often than we would like to believe. My wife and I were driving to pick up our daughter from daycare yesterday. And we happened upon this particular topic somehow. The context, in broad strokes, if I'm remembering correctly, is that we basically need to move into a bigger space. That's the reality of the Boldea household as it stands. Now that we have a second child on the way, and she is due in December, we simply need more space. And we were debating whether to buy or to wait for the market to dip again. And the conversation went from one topic to another. You know how it goes with someone that you've been married to for, what, 17 years now. It just flows. And innocently, as she is sometimes wont to do, my wife wondered aloud if man still had the wherewithal for savagery. And I sort of bit my lip and let her talk, and she went on, and she wondered, you know, if man still had the wherewithal for war or for the cruelty required to, I don't know, watch someone burn alive or behead another human being or see them writhe in the hot sun upon a cross and not rush to help them down. And to be perfectly honest with you, sometimes I wish I were as innocent as my wife is. I'm not going to call her naive. She's not naive. Because she asked this question knowing full well what's going on in the world. It's not as though she's living in a cave. And I make her wear a burqa and, you know, stand and stare at the corner every day. She knows what's going on in the world, so she's not naive. But even with knowing everything that's going on, she still holds out hope that there are these people that are doing these things, these people that are capable of savagery, these people that'll take a human life for no reason other than they have nothing better to do. She continues to hold out hope that these are the outliers, that these are the barbarians. These are people so few in number that one need not concern themselves with them. And I wish I could believe what my wife hopes is true. But given the available data, given the demonstrable growth in hedonism and selfishness, not only do I believe that man still has the wherewithal for the savagery of his forefathers, I believe that today's generation would likely eclipse anything their forefathers did, given the right set of circumstances. Now, I realize this may sound like a bold statement, but I believe it to be true. I believe that today's generation would likely eclipse anything that their forefathers did, given the right set of circumstances. I'm sorry, but back in the day, no one was murdering babies by the millions simply because they were an inconvenience or a nuisance. Were there abortions 50, 60, 70 years ago? I'm sure there were. The devil in a meat suit known as Margaret Sanger and her spawn Planned Parenthood started murdering babies in 1970. So it's not as though people were righteous or holy in days gone by, but if you were to play with the percentages, if you were to weigh the numbers of those who resorted to such measures 40, 50, 60 years ago and those doing it now, you would come to realize that the heart of man grows exceedingly wicked. And that wickedness is made manifest in society itself. Millions and millions of women march in the streets in support of a death cult. And not just a death cult that murders innocent. So if you think that we've become more civilized and by definition less savage, you're fooling yourself. Now, what's worse is that the last line of defense against the darkness, the dam that was supposed to keep evil from consuming everything, is leaking like a sieve. It's got so many holes in it, it looks like Swiss cheese. And many who claim to be on the front lines of the battle have secretly acquiesced because they realized it's easier just to sail down the lazy river than fight against the current and even swim upstream. The hearts of men are still exceedingly wicked. That has not changed. It has not changed over the course of millennia. Why would you even begin to think that it's changed over the course of a generation? I would submit that rather than change for the better, the hearts of men have grown more wicked still. Because the counterbalance wasn't there anymore. The counterbalance wasn't there anymore to bring things back to the center. You see, the church got dragged further and further along, and every time the pendulum swung back, it was less dramatic than the last, until it finally just got stuck on the extreme that we're seeing now. I realize that the following may sound hyperbolic, but I assure you that it's not. I thought about this long and hard, and it's the only rightful conclusion that one can come to, seeing the way that culture has developed, seeing all the shattered lives and ruined families and broken people scattered about. Once in a while, I like to reiterate the fact that I live in a town of 25-odd thousand people. And if you could spend a day just being a fly on the wall and hearing all the things that I hear from people who come just needing to talk, just needing to vent, just needing some counsel, something. If you could hear the drama playing out in a town of 25,000 people, you wouldn't sleep for a week. Teenage heroin addicts, teenage suicides, I'm left speechless. Because this is not Miami. This is not L.A. This is not even Chicago. This is Dinkpot, Watertown, Wisconsin. And you have someone coming up to you going, I've been battling this for so long. The only thing that I have left to decide is whether I hang myself or use a shotgun. Where's the church? Where's the household of faith that is supposed to be a beacon? Where's the household of faith that is supposed to be a light? Look, the reason that things have gone to ruin so completely and so profoundly, not only in this nation, but throughout the world as far as culture is concerned, is because the church, absent from the equation for a very long time, we did our utmost to catch up to the changing culture, and someone somewhere came up with the brilliant but utterly flawed idea that in order to change the culture, you must become more and more like the culture that you're attempting to change. That would be like telling someone who's trying to lose weight that the way to achieve their goal, the way to drop the weight, is to gain more weight. Want to lose some weight? Get fatter. That's the answer. That's the secret. If you want to lose weight, get fatter. You're welcome. That's the same kind of flawed logic that the church has used for the better part of 20 years. So here was the church trying to imitate the world and doing a poor job of it. Sort of like being the poorly packaged generic aspirin next to the real aspirin, which everyone tells you is the same thing in a different bottle, but you just don't buy it because it just looks off. What so many in the church are missing is that we're not supposed to be the same thing in a different bottle. Does that make sense? It makes sense in my head. We're not supposed to be an off-brand of aspirin. We're not supposed to be aspirin at all anymore. We are not supposed to be the same thing in a different bottle. We're not supposed to try and imitate the world to the point that no one can tell the difference anymore. It's not about aspirin and generic aspirin. We're supposed to be light and salt. And we're supposed to be these things not in secret, not undercover, not fearful of what men might say, but bold and true and evident to one and all. Jesus tells us as much in Matthew chapter 5. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. And he uses another example. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Do we understand the fact that salt retains value only insofar as it retains the properties with which it was endowed? It's a heavy thing to wrap your mind around, but it's profound once you get it. Salt retains its value only insofar as it retains the properties with which it was endowed. If salt loses its flavor, then it loses its intended use and purpose. It loses that thing that made it special and necessary. And it becomes good for nothing. At least nothing more than to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. Now, we can unpack this for a little while if you want, because there's a difference between being persecuted and being trampled underfoot by men because we were thrown out due to the very real and undeniable reality that we lost our flavor. As far as being persecuted, Jesus said, "Blessed are you when they revile and persecute you and say all kinds of evil against you falsely for my name's sake. Rejoice and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Now, the key here, what this entire verse revolves around, is the word falsely, as in not true. The problem nowadays is that men who have lost their flavor, who have been thrown out and are being trampled underfoot, are claiming that they're being persecuted when it's not really persecution. Being trampled underfoot because you lost your flavor is not being persecution. It's not being persecuted. It's nowhere near persecution. But I hear it so often. Men who get caught and exposed for doing unseemly things, they resort to persecution. That's the last card in their arsenal. "I'm being persecuted." No, you're not. Like the guy we talked about last week with the fleet of luxury cars and the $1.5 million apartment. What is happening to him is not persecution. It is justice. He's not being falsely accused. He's not being falsely reviled. He deserves all that's coming to him. And I, for one, hope that they throw the book at him because he exploited the most vulnerable of God's children. And he injected them with false hope that they sent him their last few cents because they believed it would multiply like a jalapeno seed. If you don't know what I'm talking about, look up Benny Hinn's interviews with this guy. Brilliant. And yes, he was Benny Hinn's protege. You know, these are people who thought they too would be writing a volume of "Don't Repo My Car." And instead of, you know, sitting down at the old typewriter and banging out a page turner, they just watched from their kitchen as a burly gentleman hooked up their car to a truck and just towed it away. So, yeah, I have no empathy. Because a sleazy con man is getting justice. And I guarantee you, if it hasn't happened already, I haven't looked. But if it hasn't happened already, it will happen shortly. The persecution card will be played to the fullest. So there are two caveats here. One, the evil that is said against you must be false. And two, his namesake. When those two things are present, then you can rejoice and be exceedingly glad. For great is your reward in heaven. That's what the book says. That's what Jesus said. Understand that if you strive for holiness, strive for righteousness, if you strive to be sanctified and set apart and anointed and circumcised of heart, to do the will and work of the Father, it is inevitable that you will endure persecution. Jesus pointed this out to his disciples by reminding them that they persecuted the prophets before them in like manner. It would be nothing new. Just as it will be nothing new when you will be persecuted. The only difference between now and then is that we can point to the apostles and to the disciples of Christ and say that they were persecuted in like manner as well. See, Jesus pointed to the prophets. We can point to Jesus and the disciples. That's the only difference. Persecution across the board is your lot in life as a child of God. And anyone who tells you different has to contend with the words of Jesus. Look, if you believe that the devil is real, that evil is real, that darkness is real, and that they are single-minded in their pursuit to destroy all that is good and just and wholesome, then why would you live your life in such a manner as to not expect persecution at some point down the road, at some point in your life? Persecuted the prophets in like manner. If they persecuted the apostles in like manner, if they persecuted Christ in like manner, how is it that we can logically and reasonably conclude that they will not persecute us in like manner if we are everything that God expects us to be? What sort of mental gymnastics must one attempt in order to conclude that though every true believer suffered some measure of persecution, and Christ himself warned of persecution to come, that they will somehow be exempt from it and not have to endure a bit of it? See, this is important, because too few believers by far are in a state of readiness things. Why? Because they've been fed a steady diet of escapism for the better part of 3 decades. Look, things can turn on a dime. In an instant, in the blink of an eye, and very often they do. But just consider all that's been happening this week. And yes, more has been happening than, you know, CNN having a hissy fit over some silly video. The North Koreans apparently tested yet another ICBM missile, which has reached farther than any of their previous ones. What this means is that they are making progress. And if their progress keeps pace, well, very soon, they will be able to reach the continental United States with one of their rockets. So, yeah, that happened. Now, instability and uncertainty continue to grow throughout the world. And seemingly those who would see it all come crashing down and burn to the ground are increasing in number. They're coming out of the woodwork. You would be amazed at the number of young people who identify themselves as anarchists. Now, either they don't know the definition, or they've just gotten bored with civil society. Regardless, this is not a time to rest on our laurels or hope that Jesus was wrong regarding what we ought to be doing, as well as what we ought to expect from those who have rejected him, those who despise him, those who blaspheme him, those who take his name in vain, those who deny his very existence, and those who loathe anyone associated with him. This is the time to stand boldly. This is the time to let our light shine, that the world might see Jesus in us, that the world might see hope in us, that the world might see peace in us, that the world might see the difference in us and wonder. Well, we have a letter to get to, and we shall see if there are any questions contained therein. And if there's any time left, get to the president's visit to Poland. How the speeches would have been different. Let's just put it that way. If you haven't heard the speech given in Poland today, there was mention of God and family and faith. It was solid. The man hammered home the point that faith and family, cornerstones of civilization, and that God is what we need. I know. It was good. Imagine how we would have been told by Depends Barbie that what was needed was more LGBTQ acceptance and transgender bathrooms had she be the one to go on this trip. I ran across this article and it was hilarious to me, because apparently the mainstream media in the U.S. is having a hissy fit over the fact that Trump put faith in family and not government and bureaucracy at the center of our lives. I'm going to go through this real quick because I want to get to the letter, but it says, mainstream media broadcasters at Sky News have suggested President Trump's declaration that the U.S. and Poland put faith and family, not government and bureaucracy, at the center of our lives will have been badly received in France and Germany. And the one question that springs to mind is, who cares? Continue the way they are in France and Germany. They'll be crawling 7 miles on broken glass to beg for the U.S.'s help to rid them of their invaders. So the fact that France and Germany are so far gone that the notion of family and faith being the center of our lives will be received badly really doesn't affect me all that much. Anyway, the article continues and it says, In a revealing discussion with Times correspondent Michael Binion, Sky anchor Colin Brazier said that there were elements of President Trump's speech which conjured up memories of Samuel P. Huntington and the Clash of Civilizations. Because that's what it is! Anyway, a reference to the late American political scientist who warned that Islamic extremism would replace communism as the great or the greatest threat to the West following the end of the Cold War. Smart man. Absolutely yes, concurred Binion. President Trump made it very clear that the continent of Europe faced threats from the East and the South, and by that he almost certainly meant Islamist extremism, and he very much underlined the common values, the cultural, religious, and social values that bind Europe together, suggesting that Europe is part of this Western idea and that this idea and this tradition is under threat from the East. I'm with him so far. Hit the nail right on the head there. President Trump had told listeners in the Polish capital, the fundamental question of our time is whether the West has the will to survive. Good question. He asked, do we have the confidence in our values to defend them at any cost? Do we have enough respect for our citizens to protect our borders? Apparently, France and Germany don't. Do we have the desire and the courage to preserve our civilization in the face of those who would subvert and destroy it? All good questions. All good questions. But there is also a question for the church. Do we have the strength of character? Do we have determination? Do we have the wherewithal to be the light that God expects us to be? Question. Because as good a speech as this was in Poland, and as much of faith and family and godliness even, as the president highlighted, if the church doesn't step up, if the household of faith doesn't stop trying to appease the world, if it doesn't stop trying to be generic aspirin, just another version of what already exists, then there is no hope for our way of life. There is no future. And if there were a dozen other places to go to, perhaps I wouldn't be talking about this so often. But if this comes crumbling down, if freedom is lost here, where, pray tell, will we go? That's the question. I want to raise my daughters peacefully, freely, without government coming and mandating that I teach them about mental disorders such as transgenderism and homosexuality. If we lose that here, then it's lost. This is why it matters. Anyway, on to the letter. I could have talked about this more at length, but it was a long speech. Personally thought it was a good speech. And again, it highlighted not only the need for God and the importance of faith and family, between westernized or Western civilization and the barbarian hordes who would love nothing more than to destroy it. All right, the letter. Dear Brother Michael, sorry, this is going to be lengthy. I read those first words, and so I gave it a little more time than usual. See, we have about 13 minutes left. So if it's lengthy, not a problem. Let's get to it. This is in regard to your conversation with Brother Jeff last week concerning governmental rights over our children if they don't agree with parental biblical upbringing. I wish to tell you a true story that I have permission to tell and can provide contact information if you require any to validate this to be factually true. I know who wrote this letter, and I will take you at your word, so no need to call and confirm, but I appreciate the offer. Thank you. The letter continues, and it says, some years back, I worked for Family and Children's Services for children at risk for abuse and neglect from birth up to 3 years of age. My daughter just turned three, June 12th. I worked with the children and their families on child development and the family structure, and I would assess their progress in my weekly reports. At one time, I walked into an apartment of one of my cases after being invited in and found drugs and drug paraphernalia on the dining room table. I mentioned to the mother that she knew I was coming at this time and she knew I would have to turn her into Child Protective Services. She said, that's okay. I keep it, meaning the drugs, in a shoebox in the top of the closet out of his, meaning the child's, reach. Well, that's a responsible mother, is it not? That's another thing that I had to deal with this week. Someone who has a child, a toddler, a young child. And somehow, I want to understand, but there's a limit to my ability to understand. Let me put it that way. I've never been addicted. So I don't know how strong the pull is. But I know how strong the pull of love is towards my daughter. And I know that there is nothing I wouldn't give up as far as earthly things are concerned. I believed for a second that it would better her life. So with that being said, it's another thing I had to deal with this week. A young mom, 2-3-year-old child, back on heroin, just out of rehab. And it's stuff that just, it ages you. Absolutely breaks you to see this. Anyway, the letter continues and it says, I couldn't believe the lack of fear of this mother for her child's safety and for her to say something like this fearlessly to me, her caseworker. While I was still there, there was a knock on the door and her dealer had shown up. She proceeded to inform him, again without fear, that her caseworker was there and asked him if he could come back later. But before he had a chance to leave, Tim, what he had. Oh, what a story. Oh, no. With the week that I've had, this is not the letter that I wanted to read. I didn't have time to read this earlier. Gino forwarded it to me about 5 minutes before the program. It's not you. It's just the content. of the letter on top of everything that I had to deal with this week. Needless to say, I did what was required of me. But to my surprise, CPS, or Child Protective Services, said that they were refusing to look into the matter and that they wanted nothing to do with the case. Well, bureaucracy at work. Because that's what we need, more bureaucracy. If you want something to run smoothly and efficiently and come in on budget, hand it over to a bureaucrat. I had another case come across my desk. Because of the decisions made for the newborn child's daycare while the parents worked. I knew of this case before it ever hit my desk because the new parents were Christians and my cousins. I was surprised when I saw their names as potential for abuse and neglect, and I was able to clear them through another caseworker, thus they never got the surprise knock on the door. The new parents had filled out the required paperwork at the hospital after giving birth. And the parents weren't aware or ever told that this is used as a tracking device for FNCS, I don't know what that is, run by county and state. At this time, I had another woman on my caseload, and I was given specific instructions that if I even found a cat turd outside the litter box, I was to turn her in, that they wanted the children. Teresa had been a victim of an armed robbery with a gun pointed directly in her face while at work, and she was suffering from PTSD. She was also a single mother due to circumstances beyond her control, and she was a Christian. I worked with her to try to put her life back in order and did whatever it took to help her keep her children, including helping her on my days off a couple of times. She did everything that was asked of her and more. She was a real fighter. But she had trouble with the trust of people outside her home and church due to the robbery. I eventually left that job and occasionally thought of Teresa over the years and would say a prayer for her. A couple of years ago, I was at the Family Christian Bookstore and a woman approached me whom I had seen working there on other occasions, and I had thought looked familiar to me. She asked if I was Nyla. After confirming that it was, in fact, I, she introduced herself as Teresa and said I was her caseworker through FCNS, or I guess that's Family and Child Services, those years back, and she thanked me for helping her. She went on to say that other caseworkers had informed her that the state had also ordered them to find a reason to take her children from her. Through God's grace and mercy, she was able to keep her children, and the last one has now graduated from college this year. We are still in contact with each other to this day. All praise and glory be to God. All right, this letter started out very darkly, I must admit. It ended on a positive note, and for that, I thank you. Because if it would have ended as it began, I would have needed another cold shower. It's, what can you say? Other than there are people whose selfishness reaches such heights that they care not a whit about anything else except their own pleasure, except their own momentary pleasure. And so the reason the first woman felt no fear is because she didn't care whether you would take the children or leave the children. To her, it was all the same. For her, it was the fix. It was the high. That was the thing that drove her. So her children were tertiary issues. They were probably a burden. Now, the second woman was a true mother. She wanted to keep her children with her, and she fought for it. But it also goes to show how insidious bureaucrats and bureaucracies can be. Look, if you think that the notion that justice is blind holds true, then why isn't the Clinton family in prison? Just off the top of my head, you know. So justice isn't blind. They just tell that to us rubes to keep us in line. So if the day ever comes that they pass laws wherein it is within their purview to remove your children from their home because you will not teach them the glories of pretending to be another gender, then they will do it. This is why the best action is preventative. Act before they enact such laws. Well, it seems another hour has come and gone. Yeah, it's been one of those weeks. I apologize. But we carry on. And we help hurting people. And we try to be there. And we try to listen. And we try to offer counsel. Because that's what we've been called to do. So with that, thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us. I'm going to turn it over to Gino if he has anything to say. If not, God bless you and good night.
Amen. Thank you, Michael. And, you know, when Mike's mentioning our town, it is a very hurting town. And there is a lot of things going on. We rallied for many months to see one of the worst taverns in town shut down. And God did shut it down. When you have meetings, and you invite so many churches to be part of the battle, you end up with the same 10 or 15 people showing up. And that's what Mike's talking about. Where is the church? That's why God put on my heart, do an album, Stand With God, calling the church to stand up for the things of God. And the church needs to stop sinning in silence, because silence is sin, and be a vocal, you know, vocal and powerful tool of God to enact change, because God is a God of change. God is able to change laws, and God is able to change, you know, change your city, your town. And when you really rely on the army of God to stand up, you realize that it's not a huge army, and their head out of the water and become a target are fewer. So this challenge to the church to stand, to be strong, to stand for God is definitely an urgent need in the church. And, you know, when there's a local concert, they fill the stadium. They fill the hall. They fill the venue. But when there's a city council meeting where you need the church to come and stand against strip clubs and porn joints and vile places where they drug girls' drinks with date rape drugs and all this garbage, and you invite the brothers, you know, and sisters, you get a handful. Even in our town of 23,000 people with 27 churches, you'd think you'd have 1,000 people there defending faith and freedom and values of God. And so, Brother Mike is right. Where's the church? And we're not a big church in our town. We're not a huge church. But God wants to use the church to be his voice of truth and his voice of changing the culture by, again, as Mike said, not being like the culture. You know, why does a church try to do the same things the world does to win the world and make our gospel so palatable, but without conviction of the Holy Ghost and the power to convict people to want to change? God help us to get back to Jesus, the Bible, and conviction. That was my little spiel to confirm what my brother said. The church needs to stand up, wake up, rise up, and be the voice of God in our generation. God bless you all. Thank you for listening to the broadcast. It will be put up on YouTube tomorrow. And continue to be a light in your town.
Thank you for listening to today's broadcast, The Light of Truth with Michael Baldea. If you would like to order a copy of today's broadcast, please visit our website at handofhelp.com. If you have questions about our ministry, you can email us at handofhelpoffice@aol.com or simply call us at 920-206-9910. God bless you.